Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in the middle of your black pants party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. Joining me out on the road today, old Spence.
Morning.
It's been a while, brother.
Yeah. Oh, how have you been, Mr. Rocky?
Man, I hadn't told you this. I hadn't even texted you this, but man, I enjoyed the video of you and your dad in Florida. That's what it's about.
Oh, good. Man, that was a good time. It was special, and we had a really enjoyed being together.
You know, Brendan Hudson and I were talking about it yesterday about where hunting has gone to online and kind of the direction it's pushed. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think the guys that win are producing stuff like with you and your son, you and your dad. That's real, man. That's real stuff. It's not the Instaglam.
Yeah. Yeah. We were actually talking something similar, a related topic, but Josh has been calling, you know, everybody's been picking on millennials here for a while, and Josh has been, he's renamed that generation the picks or it didn't happen generation, because a lot of today's, the younger hunters of today are, you know, their cell phone out, Snapchat and video and text and whatever before that turkey's even done flopping, or before, you know, they've got a limit all the way hung up or whatever. And we were talking, Josh and I and a couple other friends actually the other day, about how what we fell in love with had nothing to do with showing your friend, you know, the hunting side of it. I mean, what we fell in love with was the experience. And I'm not saying that from a standpoint of like these kids don't understand or they're spoiled, or I'm not being negative about the current generation. Really what I'm saying is I hope that what they're falling in love with is the experience and not the attention that the experience garners, if that makes any sense.
100%.
I mean, dude, I remember in your chest when you almost got a shot at a Jake, you know, when a Jake showed up 5 feet from the turkey, you know, and I remember my dad going, you know, can you get a shot at him? Can you get a shot at him? That whole experience and kind of what that does to your heart, and then describing that to everybody had nothing to do with getting likes or views or, you know, there's no way of measuring that. I mean, the only way of measuring that experience was what it did for you and how it made you feel and the memory it created. And I really hope that a lot of my younger friends in this generation, you know, I really hope that they don't miss that. I hope that somehow social media doesn't prevent them from appreciating the way the experience, you know, what the experience itself, anyways.
Life was about the moment and not the attention that the moments brought.
Yep, yep, And I think that's, I don't want to be stuck in the, I don't want to be, you know, an old codger stick in the mud, kind of like, you know, the internet's running everything. I don't want to be that way. But at the same time, the attention that social media generates, people really like that attention. And it's got its own pros and cons. And I just hope that a lot of the younger hunters don't seek that attention more than they seek the coolness of the experience in the outdoors. Because if seeking the attention is really what's driving it, that's short lived. You know, that doesn't last, and that doesn't get passed on to the next generation, and that doesn't get, you know,
Hey, it kind of leads me into my next question to you, because Criswell and I have had this conversation. There's a group of hunters,
mm-hmm.
of just stone cold, I hate to use that word, killers, but
mm-hmm.
I call them the silent killers. You never see mm-hmm. them posting on social media. They kill mm-hmm. the crap out of them all the time.
I just call them better Indians. You know the old adage, you know, everybody's trying to build a better mousetrap. Well, there's just some people that are better Indians than others, and it doesn't matter how you cut it, they're just better. I mean, you know, if I kill one, they
talk about
it.
They
right.
These guys I'm talking about, they never put it on social media. They never talk about it at the gas station. Hey, how'd y'all do today? One or two?
Yeah.
These guys
killed a few.
Killed a few. That's a great one. But I call them the group of silent killers.
They don't need approval from their
friend list.
That's right.
For what they do.
That's right. Exactly. That's right. Yep, no doubt. There's definitely a group of them.
I would love to find a few different stories of people that I classify up under that title, the silent killers, because I think it'd be some great uh-huh. lessons taught by those guys.
Yep. There's definitely a few of them, and I know a few really well, and there's a bunch that I've heard stories about. You know, campfire stories about that I've never met or known, but that's a real thing for sure. Those guys change your perspective, you know. And I'll tell you something else. The current generation of social media absorbed folk, and again, I don't mean that to come across with a negative connotation, but that group will never hear about that other group, because the other group intentionally does not want the quiet group, the better Indians, intentionally avoid interaction and conversation with the social media stars. They don't let their worlds intertwine.
But here's the thing, Spence. Is this one of those deals in the industry that you have to find out on your own? Because so many people are fighting. Here's what I'm getting at. So many people are fighting to try to get to an imaginary top that's really not there in any way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do they have to just fight that battle and find out for themselves that there's nothing there? Or, I mean, I don't get it. That's what I don't get about it.
Yeah, I'd say they do. I guess, you know, social media gives everybody an audience. So,
but everybody thinks that they're going to make a living in the hunting industry. And the two ways that I found out that you're going to make a living in the hunting industry, you better be a guide, or you better invent something that you're going to sell a lot of.
Yeah, you pretty much have to be a manufacturer or an outfitter. I mean, you're right. That's it. And there are people who make a living being a host, or the current word that's being thrown around a lot is an influencer. but that's changing pretty quickly, and it's changing for a lot of reasons. One reason it's changing is because TV is such a different market than it used to be. Television show hosts, you know, that was something that you could do to make a living. If you had a good idea and good content, and, you know, if you could kind of put all the pieces together, that was a living. That's pretty hard job to go gunning for these days with the advent of social media, because there's so much good content and so many good personalities. And so now what you see is people hiring influencers, and I think there's a lot of folks that maybe they get paid a little bit, you know, for being an influencer, and they think that they'll be able to make a career out of it because they got paid, you know, $50 to post this or whatever. And then they find out, you know, getting paid a little bit is one thing, getting paid enough to make your mortgage payment and pay for your, you know, car note, that's a different thing. But, you know, more power to them.
Do you think, let me ask you this, and we'll close it with this. Do you think there's the drive is more for approval, or do you think it's more of an imaginary treasure at the top of an imaginary mountain? Which one is more drives people to post this stuff to social media? Which one has more of an influence?
I think approval matters to people. I mean, I just think that I'm a Christian first, and so the way I see the world is through the lens of, you know, we're broken, flawed human beings who are all compensating for something that we've done wrong, a sin condition, okay? And so I think that, like, the greatest longing in every one of our hearts is to be accepted, to be loved the way that we are. And so I think social media plays on the very same core principles that the gospel of Jesus Christ plays on. You know, and I'm not saying it, don't hear me saying something that I'm not saying. I'm just, I guess what I'm pointing out is that the, you know, the most, satisfying thing to our soul is to be accepted. And that's because we're fundamentally not accepted, right? We're separated from God our Father. And so that's why the gospel of Jesus Christ registers with us, and why it's good news, and why it's, you know, life-giving and heals our soul. And it's the reason why it feels good to get, you know, 1,000 likes on a picture that you post or something that you've done. And, I mean, just it is. And that's not all bad, but it can be, you know, it can be. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's way more powerful than any sort of distant prize of maybe making a living in it, stuff like that. I mean, I think people do it for the approval.
Amanda, I never imagined you going in that far in depth, but I think you're exactly right.
I mean, you know, I'm
totally transparent here. I've caught myself looking at posts that I made. Oh, man, that one really... But I look at it from I'm kind of looking at what taps on people's emotions.
Yeah.
What kind of post does.
Hey, listen, let's don't even pretend or lie about it. It feels good. You know, you kill a turkey, you stomp on his head, and you take a picture of, you know, wearing Crocs, stepping on a gobbler's bloody head, and you get 1,000 likes on that, man. That, I mean, are you kidding me? Like, that feels good.
I agree with you.
For people to tell you. It's no different than when you hit a home run in Little League Baseball and come around the third base and your whole team's down at home plate and they're slapping you on the helmet and, you know, jumping around. And there's no difference except that it's on the internet instead of in person. And so you're lying if you say it doesn't feel good.
I'm not saying you.
I'm just saying the general audience, like, everybody's got to look at it and say, yeah, that feels really good. Like, I like that. I like to be validated.
I see, the difference in me is I want to have a group study after something mine is done and complete and the likes and comments are over with. I want to ask, get everybody in a group and say, okay, what motivated you to click this? That's what I want. I want to know from a marketing perspective.
Right.
Because then there's some, you're like, oh, man, this is killer. You've written up this post. This is great. And then, oh, man, 50 likes is all?
Right.
So look, last week, or actually 2 weeks ago, we left the story with you and Dawson. Actually, y'all recorded a huge amount of content.
Yeah, we were filming for a television show,
kind
of aimlessly, and for to save a long story, it didn't really pan out, couldn't really generate the sponsorship dollars, and so in January, about the same time of SHOT Show, right around in SHOT Show, this kid named Dylan Farrell, who was doing some creative content work for Drake Waterfowl.
And stop 2 seconds. So, all right, before you start talking about Dylan, I don't know if this becomes before or after, and I want to ask, but so at what point does Dylan kind of give you the idea for the Webisodic series, or is that where the story's going? I don't mean to interrupt.
That's where the story's going.
Okay.
That's where the story's going. So, all right. So this would have been duck season of 16 and 17. So this would have been January of 2017. Dawson is living at our camp in Reno, fall of 2016 and January of 2017. So in January, the whole time I was looking for additional cameramen, okay? And I'm kind of always on a search for a new guy, and that's just kind of my mindset in business, is I'm always looking for the next key player, right? It's no different than the general manager of an NBA basketball team. Like, he's always looking for the next talent. So in all my businesses, I'm looking for who's the next guy that I can kind of add to the team. And so with Dawson, he's living at camp, and we're trying to film a television show, sorta. And a lot of that's vague, but I'm basically going, the intention was we filmed a lot of content, and we're going to have a sizzle reel ready to go to SHOT Show in January of 2017. Right before SHOT Show, like right after Christmas, this young guy named Dylan Farrell that I had met on Facebook through Drake Waterfowl. Drake had a creative team of people that basically they gave some product to, and those people took pictures and in exchange for the product, and it gave them marketing material and social media content and whatnot. And so I paid attention to that. There was a Facebook group, and I paid attention to those guys that were in there, the creative team, and looked at their work, and I kept noticing this Dylan Farrell kid, and I liked the pictures that he was posting. I liked his content and kind of the way it looked. And so I reached out to him and said, hey, where are you from? He said, Central Missouri, kind of between Columbia and Kansas City, and I said, have you ever hunted in the woods? And he said no, and he was pretty much a goose hunter and duck hunted some, but mostly where he was from, they liked to goose hunt. And we talked back and forth, and I said, well, hey, would you be interested in coming down and filming with us for a week? I'm looking for another guy in addition to Dawson to kind of be a steady cameraman, and just wondered if you would be interested in that. And at the time, Dylan had done a little bit of video work, but mostly photography. And I asked him if he thought he could, had he done some video, and he sent me a few things, and we back and forth, and it seemed to be a good relationship and work out. And so he said, well, I got this particular week is before I go back from winter break, and I can come this week. And so, okay, great. Well, come on, and just and no telling what it'll be, whether it'll be hunting a river or woods or I don't know, but just come on and see if you get along with everybody. And, you know, really I cared about two things. I cared about what kind of content he could create and the his product, his video product, if you will, and his potential. But I also cared about how well he fit in with the guys because, you know, if there's so much of duck hunting is a group dynamic, right? It's everybody needs to get along. And if you got a cameraman that everybody hates, that doesn't work real well. So he comes to Arkansas and it looks like the conditions are awesome. The Cache River's high. We get this big cold front and get a big pile of snow and we go and we hunt and basically like there's no ducks and go back second day and we shoot pretty good the second day, kill a limit, and he's having fun, likes it, and gets some cool stuff, him and Dawson, and then after we catch some ducks.
What do you first notice about, does he blend into the group pretty well?
The first thing I noticed about Dylan Farrell was he's like the most quiet human being I've ever met. Like, this guy does not talk, and I'm the polar opposite of that. Like, I'm the reason King Solomon wrote in Proverbs, when words are many, sin is not absent, is because God knew in his sovereignty that one day Spence Halford was going to be on the face of this earth running his big mouth, and I needed to learn to be quiet. Well, Dylan's the polar opposite of that. He needs to open his mouth and speak a little bit more. Big Murray calls Dylan Whispering Dylan because he just doesn't talk. But, yeah, I mean, the first thing I noticed was we'd been hanging out with a camera kid named Dawson. Extroverted, happy-go-lucky, you know, always kind of giggling, laughing, and cutting up. And Dawson and Dylan is just like, man, he's snapping pictures, and he's working hard, and he's busy, and he's just quiet. Like, he's just blending in, and he's taking pictures of everything everybody's doing, and, you know, just kind of soaking up the experience. And that's really fun. That's one of the funnest things about hiring a new cameraman, is when you take them to see something or do something they've never seen or done before, like, you can just see the inspiration just, it's all over them. It's in their body language and in their body count. And, I mean, they just start taking pictures, you know.
He captures the things that you have forgotten about but mean so much to a
hunter. Exactly. That's what you said that better than I did. But that's what you notice is, like, I mean, it's the little things like taking the boat out of the water and just, you know, hanging a dog stand or hanging the next duck you shot up off the stringer, you know, just whatever, those little things. He notices those things, takes pictures, videos, and you watch them, you're like, dang, that was so cool. Like, was I there for that? That's awesome. Looks so much better in a picture. Looks so much better in a video. Well, Dylan just fit in really good.
Here's the best way to put it, because duck hunters love football. And being around these guys for a couple of days, Dawson is the Hugh Freeze of the camera world, and Dylan is the Nick Saban.
I don't know. I wouldn't
they
give
both do
that much credit.
They both do an awesome job at what they do, coaching a football game.
Say,
but
say
Dylan is all serious all the time.
Well, yeah, he's pretty serious all the time. That's true. He is definitely more serious. But I would not give Hugh Freeze nearly that much credit.
I'm not take his personal
if
life.
Dylan,
out of it.
If Dylan is the Nick Saban, then Dawson is the Dabo Sweeney or something like that.
Yeah, I should have said Dabo. Dabo is open and social, laughing, cutting up. That's a better way of putting it. Yeah, you're right.
And the only reason I'm saying that is because I think that Dawson and Dylan are equally talented, and people.
That's what I was trying to get across too.
Who's better? And the truth of the matter is that they're both better at some things than the other one, and it's pretty equal. If you made a list, a pretty detailed list of like what things Dylan's good at and what things Dawson's good at, it would be a completely different list of things they're good at. and all the things that one of them is good at, the other one's not as good at. They can all do, they can both do a little bit of all of it. But like if you gave Dylan his top three, what's he best at, and you gave Dawson his top three of what he's best at, and then you gave them both a what are the three things they're the worst at, like pretty much to a T, Dawson's things, the three things he's the worst at are like Dylan's three things he's the best at. And Dylan's three things he's the worst at are Dawson's three things he's the best at. I mean, like they're the perfect mirror complement of one another for what I'm trying to accomplish. And
it's a marriage made in heaven.
I guess. There's it's definitely not perfect, but it's you know, the good Lord's taking care of us for sure. So where I was going with this is that, so it's January, Dylan comes and films with us. He probably doesn't say 25 words the entire time he's there. His camera's running nonstop. And, you know, we're all kind of like, you know, well, what about this kid? You know, and I'm like, man, you know, he's okay. Like, he's not Dawson. He doesn't goof off and hang out and laugh with us the same way, you know, Dawson does. But, man, he's working hard and he's getting some cool stuff. Well, then all of a sudden one afternoon I'm driving home. Oh, so basically Dylan hunted three-ish days with us. The first day it snowed. The second day was a beautiful clear sky day and we shot a six-man limited ducks and he got some cool stuff. And the third day after we shot that six-man limit, that was we were hunting in like literally ankle-deep water. And after we shot that limit of ducks, I said, you know, why don't I bring Tripp back tomorrow for his first duck hunt? He's never been on a duck hunt, and I've been looking for a chance to take him. And I had not really had a good chance because we're trying to kind of film for this television show thing. And so I'm doing a lot of the hole running and just the logistics of pulling it all off. It just wasn't conducive to having him. At the time, Tripp would have been just barely turned five. Okay, he's seven now.
Oh, my gosh. The video that changed the hunting world on the internet.
He turned seven in August. And so at this time in January, he would have just turned five in August. So and Tripp's a little guy. Like, he's a small frame kid. He's not tall for his age or heavy for his age. I mean, he's a little guy. So we shoot this limited ducks. It's in ankle-deep water. I call my dad on the way home, and I'm like, Dad, you know, weather's not good tomorrow. It's really cloudy and going to be kind of windy, but I really think we could shoot a few ducks. Nobody's going to want to be in this spot. It's off kind of off the beaten path. It's just a piece of cake place to hunt. We're not going to have to race for it. And why don't you know, let's take tomorrow off work and let's take Tripp on his first duck hunt. And my dad was like, awesome. I think it was a Tuesday morning. And my dad said, I'm in. That'd be great. My dad doesn't work on Tuesdays. And he said, I could do that. So I got two cameramen in town. And I let Dylan and Dawson, they're staying in a hotel in Brinkley. We're on the Cache River. And I'm driving back and forth to Memphis. But all my buddies are over there at the hotel in Brinkley. And we kind of get a plan. And they're going to run the whole, even though we don't need to run the whole, but, you know, there's people over there to do it. So me and Tripp are going to come in at daylight. So the plan is Dawson's going to go in and run the hole with all the guys. Dylan's going to come in with me and my dad and Tripp. Dylan's got to, like, drive home or something after we hunt. So we let Dylan sleep in, and we meet him at the ramp. And I can't remember whose boat we came in. It might have been Ty Lester, but one guy was going to wait back with a boat. So me and my dad, Dylan and Tripp and a boat that wasn't mine. That way I could sit in the floor with Tripp. And so for just a second, I got to tell you that when I got in the truck with my dad and Tripp that morning, kind of it hit me what a cool event this was. And I don't mean that from a standpoint of, look at me on social media, this is so neat. It just was I don't know how to describe it any more than my heart was really full. I never thought that I would get the chance to have my dad and my son together in a boat going on a duck hunt. and I was a little overwhelmed by a lot of things. You know, I had a couple camera guys there, had all my friends were there, and it was like perfect. It was 60 degrees. It wasn't cold. I knew we were going to ankle deep water, so there was like no chance of Tripp falling in and filling up his waders. It was just everything I'd ever imagined it would be. And for a dad who had, you know, I had two daughters early in our marriage when Lindy and I had just gotten married. My girls are 13 and 12 now, Tripp's 7. So there was 5 years between Katie, my middle daughter, and Tripp, and we were not going to have a third kid. And I mean, I told people back then that, you know, I was okay. I was just going to have son-in-laws instead of having a son. So I got a son, and now we're all, you know, and like all this stuff kind of like comes to a head, and we're going hunting. And at the time, now we've not made any films. We've not made a television show. Like, there's nothing to, I have no frame of reference for what could happen with all this stuff. I'm just legit feel, you know, I got a full heart because this is a cool experience. So we go hunting and we're having fun, and man, Tripp is just, it's like sensory overload. He has no idea what to expect. And it's a kind of a long boat ride up the cache, and we're sitting on the floor, and he's wearing a life jacket. He's between me and my dad, and you know, it's warm. So that's part of it. But he's just like, he's probably only been in a boat a couple times prior to this. So he's just, you know, soaking it all in, and I'm soaking it all in, and I'm seeing it through Tripp's eyes and through my dad's eyes, and just thinking about how cool this is. There's three generations of us, we're all going hunting in Arkansas together. And old Whispering Dylan over there is just like, if he was a sponge on day one and day two of seeing timber duck hunting for the first time, I mean, he is like in whatever the next level is, like super sponge mode. He's taking pictures and he's taking videos, and to be perfectly honest, I'm really not even paying attention to what he's doing. We're just kind of having fun. And so we're like 45 minutes in, an hour into the hunt, and there's basically, I mean, we're not seeing any of the ducks we saw the day before. Probably hadn't seen two ducks, and the day before it was just a lot of ducks. I remember thinking in my mind, it would really be cool if we could just get a duck or two, like if we could just kill a duck. And about that time, I mean, and I probably even said in my mind, Lord, I would appreciate one duck, and we'll go home, call it good. About that time, old Greenhead comes over the woods, and we quack at him a couple times, and man, he just makes the perfect death circle, a half loop, and he squares it up right in the middle of the decoys, lands on the water, I mean, in the middle of the hole, and does an old Drake whistle, and looks right at him. He's about 15 feet in front of Tripp, and nobody's got a gun. Nobody's got, you know, nobody's even close to their gun because it's been so slow. And I kind of look around, and my dad is standing right beside his gun, which is just typical for my dad. He's always got this gun. And I said, go ahead and shoot him if you want to, Dad. And about that time, the duck picks up about 3 feet off the water. Boom, Dad shoots him. Like, saw the whole thing, watched it unfold, and I'm thinking, this is perfect. Like, this is great. And, you know, we have accomplished the mission. You know, Tripp's gone and seen it, done it, and experienced the whole thing. We can go home to the house. And Brooke goes out there and picks it up. She's the only dog. Tripp's alone at night. He gets the sender. He climbs back up on the dog stand. He's got a duck to play with. We hunt for another 15, 20 minutes. Cool hunt. You know, we go home. On the way home, we stop and look at a field of snow geese. Like, I'm loving the day, okay? Not thinking anything about photography or videography or anything about movies that could be made from this experience. I'm just telling you that as a dad, I'm pumped. I'm on cloud nine. I can't even believe. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to take my son duck hunting for the first time, my dad to be there, and it just to all go off without a hitch. everybody goes back home, goes to work the next day, like, really cool. And like 3 days later, Dylan goes home. 3 days later, I'm driving home from work. And it's about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 5:30 in the afternoon. And I know exactly where I'm sitting on Highway 64. And I get an alert on my phone that Dylan Farrell's tagged me in something. And, so I click on the Facebook thing and it's a movie, and it said, the caption said something like, Spence, here's Tripp's first duck hunt. One of the coolest things I've ever experienced. And I started watching it, and like 20 seconds in, I just broke down. And I pulled over on the side of the highway, which is not like me. I typically drive with my knee and have two hands on my phone, or one hand on my phone and one hand on something else, just multitasking. And I pulled over on the side of Highway 64, just on the east side of Oakland, and I watched this video. And, man, it just absolutely knocked my socks off. And it had nothing to do with ducks getting killed. There actually wasn't even a single piece of footage in the whole thing of a duck dying. It was just like this perspective of this sweet little boy going on his first duck hunt. And it was things like the two of us walking around together. And my dad handed him, you know, M&Ms, and him blowing his duck call with me. And all these things that I had felt in my heart a couple of days before, you know, these like little snippets of things, and here it is all in a movie. And I mean, I'm sitting there and I'm just like, I'm at a loss. And I send it to Lindy, and I said, you got to watch this, baby. And I send it to my dad and send it to my mom and start sending it around. Well, over the course of the next 2 days, this thing goes viral. And,
whoa. Big time.
I mean, I don't have a category for viral. One of the things that happened, I didn't tell this as part of the hunt, but one of the things that happened in the hunt was Jared and Kari went looking for ducks, which is totally normal for us. If it's slow, somebody's like, man, I'm going to look. And the day before, there'd been a bunch of ducks kind of back up to the northwest of us, and so Jared and Kari jump in a boat, and they ride up there and start walking. And while they're walking, they're kicking up a few ducks here and there. And they kick up a group of ducks that's pretty close to them. And for whatever reason, three or four of the ducks that jump out of that group pick up and come back over the top of their head. And they shoot, both of them shoot a duck out of it. And the greenhead that Jared shot is banded. And so Jared gives Tripp the banded greenhead, and I mean, I'm at a loss for that. You know, all these things are just so cool. And Dylan puts all this together in this film, and it goes viral. And I think it got 2 million views in like a week. And USA Today, I mean, a bunch of the different news outlets picked it up, but the Today Show picked it up on their website. And the producer of the Today Show called me and wanted to know if they could run it on their website and possibly use it as content on their television show. So they did. They put it on their Facebook page, and I mean, it just went nuts. And several people called, media outlets called, wanting an interview, wanted to talk to Dylan, wanted to talk to me, and that's a whole other story in and of itself, because in that process there was just an unbelievable amount of hate and negativity from, you know, the anti-hunting community, stuff that honestly before then I thought didn't exist. I thought when people talk about anti-hunters and all that, I really thought, I mean, I knew PETA was a real thing, but for the most part I thought that most of these Instagram superstars are always on their bandwagon talking about anti-hunters and stuff. I thought they were just really kind of saying that sort of stuff to make it look like they got a lot more attention than they did. But I'm telling you, I had death threats. I had people I had people sending me messages saying, this is how you raise a psychotic mass murderer. You know, that kid's going to be chopping up human beings one day. You know, this is how society is destroyed. I mean, like, serious insults and, you know, people, I mean, things that you take with a grain of salt, but very eye-opening, I guess, to say it that way. So this all happened, like, let's call this, like, January the 7th or January the 8th, okay?
January the 11th.
Is that what it was? Okay. I knew I'm pretty close.
I've got it pulled up on my phone.
What's the original video at now? Like 2.7 million views?
Yep, something. Exactly.
2.6. Yeah. So so January the 11th. All right. Maybe the hunt took place on January the 7th, 4 days before. Well, a week from about then is when I'm going to SHOT Show. So a week after this event, I'm headed to SHOT Show, and I'm trying to pitch a television show to my sponsors. I don't have any sponsors this time. I'm hoping to generate some sponsorship dollars to pay for this whole thing. And I've got a budget drawn up. And so I go to SHOT Show with two things on my mind. And at this point, they have no relationship to one another. But on the one hand, I'm trying to find, let's just call it $300,000 in sponsorship to pay for television ad space, or to pay for airtime and production costs. That was the low end budget figure that I was looking for in a television show. All right. So $300,000 is what I'm going to Las Vegas to try to raise. No idea whether I can do it or not. Never even been to SHOT Show. No clue what I'm doing. I'm just, you know, hey, I can get in line. I can race for a duck call in Arkansas. Surely I can go to Las Vegas and find $300,000. On the other hand, there is this thing, I don't know what to call it, that I have just experienced that is insanely powerful and eye-opening, and that is that Dylan just put this movie thing, whatever you want to call it, on Facebook, and a couple million people watched it, and it touched people, like, in their soul, if you got time and nothing to do, go read the comments on that video. Start from the very beginning. They're unbelievably moving, the things that people said and the emotions that it brought out in people, because when people watched it, what it did for them, it didn't make them think, oh, Spence is such a great guy. Oh, Tripp is such a lucky kid. Oh, you know, Chuck Halford's such a great dad. It didn't have any of that impact. It didn't even have a Rolling Thunder Game Calls is so cool impact. It didn't have anything about Rolling Thunder in it. No logos, no nothing, I don't think. The reason it impacted people was because watching that took them to their first hunting experiences. And so if you go back and read the comments, it's stuff like, wow, I remember sitting in a deer stand with my dad and watching the sun come up for the first time. You know, I remember listening to a turkey gobble for the first time. I remember when my granddaddy took me and we sat on a log and we waited for squirrels to move around. And I remember listening to my granddaddy's beagles run rabbits. Stuff that had nothing to do with duck hunting, duck calls, water. I mean, like, it evoked it brought out of people this emotional response and it was overwhelmingly amongst the hunting community positive. People were sending me messages and emails and holy cow, it's the coolest thing I've ever seen, and absolutely none of it was staged. None of it. Not one part. Not the band, not Trip blowing his duck call. I mean, not any part of it. We were literally just going hunting, taking a kid hunting. And so on the one hand, I'm carrying around this thing in my mind, how am I going to raise all this money for this television show? And on the other hand, I am carrying around this, I don't even know what to call it again, but this thought process that, just this experience that I've watched how this thing has impacted people. And that's bouncing around in my head, and I'm going, there's something, this is mind-blowing, you know, like there's something to this. This little short video, it's how it's touched people and how it's impacted people and how it's, like there's a disconnect between these two things and there's a relationship between these two ideas, but I hadn't put it all together at this point. But I go to SHOT Show with all that stuff on my – those two main things are on my plate, okay?
Nope. Next week, we will hear about the trip SHOT Show. Man, I've been catching a lot of flack for stopping points lately. But that's okay. I'll take the flack. Hey, when you got that video from Dylan the first time,
mm-hmm.
ever in your mind did you think that it would have the impact that it did and the success that it did?
No. When I watched it, what was emotional to me about it was just, you know, how precious it was that I had my son's first duck hunt in a movie like that, and what it did to me in my emotions and my heart is exactly what it did to everybody else that watched it. I immediately thought to myself, golly boy, I would give anything to be able to watch a little video clip of what my first duck hunt with my dad, my uncle, and my dad's buddies was like. How precious that would have been to, you know, as a grown man to look back and see what that was like. And so I'm watching this, and so there's like multiple angles of it. I'm sitting there and I'm kind of overwhelmed by the emotion of I can't believe how awesome this is that Dylan captured this, that I've got this forever. You know, I've got this little video, this keepsake forever of this precious moment in time. And I'm also reliving all those precious moments in time of my own, of riding in the backseat of my dad's truck and going hunting with my dad, my uncle, and their friends. And I'm going, oh my gosh, like I've, as special as that was to me, I've got this for my son. And then I'm thinking, what is this, you know, what does this feel like for my dad? You know, I can't even imagine looking back and being able to see that with my grandchild, and kind of all those things are to kind of jumbled up together in this big, just this big little, I don't know, this bundle of emotion. And
I'm going to say that when your dad first watched that, I don't know if y'all sat down and talked about it before, but I'm going to say that was one of the proudest moments of you that he's ever had. Top five.
You know, it probably was. I don't know. I've never asked him that, but the thing about it is that I didn't do anything. I mean, so there was really nothing for him to be proud of me for. Dylan.
But he had seen you. He had seen you working very diligently, very hard on bringing this all about.
Yeah.
And to capture that moment, he's got to sit back as a dad and say, wow, it's my kid. This is my son.
Yeah. Yeah, probably so. I've never asked him that question that way. Probably so. It was definitely a very special thing. I mean, it still is special, not just for me, but for a lot of people. I got no category for. I tell people all the time, I've been very fortunate, very blessed. I have some amazing friends. I mean, how cool is it that Tripp's first band came from a duck that somebody else shot and gave up, you know, to a kid? Just, you know, that's cool. It's cool because it just says, it says what I've always felt about my friends, that they're special. They didn't have to do that. There was no expectation in my mind of him giving Tripp that band. You know, Tripp didn't know anything about a band or band, and none of that, it had no meaning to him. But it'll forever, for Tripp, bands will always mean something different to him than they will for me or you or anybody else. His first memory of a leg band will be of somebody giving something up instead of somebody taking something, you know? And, I mean, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I mean, just on a bazillion levels, that's so cool to me.
I've told you since the first time we ever talked, and you can be bashful, you can be humble about it all you want to. I've said that this was a race, and you were the fastest sprinter in the room. Man, everybody's trying to catch up to you now. And this was the video that started it all. This was it.
Well, I appreciate that. I certainly don't think about it that way. I'm just trying to be real, you know. I appreciate the compliment.
Look at how many people are trying to catch you online now and what you're doing. The transparency, the realism, the short webisodic series. There's so many people that jumped in head over heels, you know, after you started all this. And we'll talk more about it next week. We'll talk more about it next week. And see, that's the key to it. That's the point that everybody misses in all of this that you get. It's about being transparent. It's about being real. You know, you see all these other ones popping up, and it's that old Joe Blow shooting ducks. We've seen that a million times. I've seen a million different ways, but showing the other parts of the hunt that the other people cut to the floor of the editing room. That's what you need in there. That's what makes it good.
Yep, no doubt about it. No doubt.
Well, Spence, enjoyed it. I can't wait to hear about SHOT Show next week and how that went, because you walk in with a loaded cannon. You're able to walk into the room this time, boy, kind of with your head held high, walking around the SHOT Show room.
Yeah, for sure. It didn't stay held high very long, but I definitely thought I was somebody when I got on that airplane. I was pretty proud of what Dylan done, and really thought to turn that into something, for sure. So,
well, Spence, until next week, thank you again, buddy. Really, really, I'm glad. I had no idea that we were going to be talking about the video that changed the internet today. I had no clue that that's where this was going. But, man, I'm going to tell you something. Boy, that video spoke to me on so many different levels, from a not only from a dad perspective, but from a marketing perspective. Golly, it was unreal. Never forget the first time I saw it. Never forget it.
Good.
But thank you again, Spence. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.